This is the happiest day of my life. Many brides and a few grooms will admit it, that they have that sentiment on their wedding day. The planning and the preparations, the invitations, the decorations, the dresses, the tuxes, they all come together to form that magical moment when a man and a woman say, "I do," and begin a new life together. But unfortunately, many fairy tale weddings don't end with the words, "and they lived happily ever after." More often than not in our world, "I do" becomes "I don't," as in, "I don't love you anymore. I don't want to be married anymore." And that happiest day becomes a horrible divorce. Now, we know that Christians aren't immune to this. It happens in the church, sadly, all too often. Why is that? I think part of the responsibility belongs right here. Because too many preachers, while they will decry the evils and the heartbreak of divorce, don't talk enough about what marriage is supposed to be. We shy away from the subject. Why? Well, Linda kind of pointed it out in our communion meditation this morning. Preachers aren't perfect. And preachers' marriages aren't perfect. And sometimes we are hesitant to speak about things that maybe we're still dealing with ourselves. We're afraid somebody's going to look at us and say, "Well, you're not living that. Doesn't appear that that's what's happening in your own life." And so we tend to shy away from those things. Some people are very hesitant to talk, as we are going to talk at least in part today, about physical intimacy within marriage. We feel that's not a subject that should be talked about in public. And yet God has put it in His Word. And I have a sense that if more preachers would address the topic of marriage as God intended it to be, maybe we wouldn't have to talk so much about divorce. And so we're going to take a look in the book of Proverbs. We are going to look at a couple passages in the New Testament as well, but we're going to focus our attention in what Proverbs has to say about the joys of marriage. The first of these is mutual satisfaction. Turn, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5. By the way, that hesitance of preachers is also why you very rarely hear the Song of Solomon read in church. And even less likely will you be to hear that book preached in church. That's a shame. Because it is part of God's holy word, and it's there for a reason. Proverbs chapter 5, beginning in verse 15. And by the way, let me preface everything that I'm about to read from Proverbs. A lot of this focuses on the wife. The wife is the subject of many of these verses. Understand that this is written from Solomon to his son. And so the perspective is, this is what you're looking for in a wife. But the truth we find in these verses go both ways. So guys, we're not off the hook. You can just as easily read spouse in these verses, because the truth does go both ways. Proverbs chapter 5, beginning in verse 15. "Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares, let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love." At first, you might be wondering, what is he talking about? Drink from your own cistern? You know, water running through the streets? Do you need to call a plumber here? What is Solomon talking about? But when you get to verse 19, it all comes together. He's talking about love. Love within a marriage. Physical intimacy between a husband and a wife. And he's saying that it should be exclusive to that relationship. This is what God had intended. what he had designed. From the very beginning, when God instituted marriage between Adam and Eve, he intended this relationship to be enduring and exclusive. Now, that is something that we will often talk about when it comes to marriage. It should last, and it should be between the husband and the wife. But I want to add a third aspect to that. God also intended it to be enjoyable. That might be a shock to some of you. God intended marriage, and particularly the intimacy within marriage, to be enjoyable. Chuck Swindoll notes, if you ever had the mistaken notion that God was some sort of puritanical prude, this will certainly help dispel that idea. No, he desires our marriages provide us with ecstatic delights, exhilarating and pleasurable to the maximum. And in case you missed it, the passage veritably extols intimate lovemaking, the joys of unrestrained, guilt-free physical delight. Not infrequently, I have counseled with couples who entertain the mistaken idea that once children are born, sex has served its purpose. You know, sort of a functional mentality. How wrong? God's plan for intimacy between married partners is much broader than a biological necessity. God created marriage and the relationship between the husband and wife. He blessed that, and that kind of intimacy is beautiful, it is satisfying, and it is stabilizing. As we had in our scripture reading this morning, God has preserved one entire book of the Bible, the Song of Solomon, or the Song of Songs, which extols the beauty of marital love, romance, intimacy. And I know many preachers have said, oh, but this is just a picture of God in Israel or God in the church. That can be an application, but that's not why it's in the book. It is there to extol marriage. This is what God created. And it was created not just to be endured, it was created to be enjoyed. And this is one area in which we as the Christian church have fallen behind in showing the world what God's design is. Because most of us adopt marriage as something to be endured, something we don't talk about, and certainly we don't talk about the fun, because that's just not right. God created it. And he created it not just as a function to perpetuate the human race. He actually created it to be enjoyed. It is to be satisfying. But here is the key, and here's where it usually breaks down. The satisfaction is to be mutual. How rare is that? I mean, think about it. How often do you come across a couple where both the husband and the wife are satisfied with their love life? Very rare indeed. You might even think that's impossible. I don't think it is. But it all has to do with a mindset. And we see that mindset in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Beginning in verse 3. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. We all know what they're talking about, right? Okay. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. Do not deprive each other except by mutual consent for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. If I were to summarize that entire paragraph in one word, it would be selflessness. The idea in marital love is that I want to meet the needs of my spouse. And my spouse wants to meet my needs. When that happens, who needs get met? Both. But if we go into the relationship thinking, what can I get out of it? And they're thinking what they can get out of it. Whose needs are going to get met? Probably neither one. Because marriage is not about what, it's not about getting, it's about giving. And you can say that about love. Love is not about getting and receiving, it's about giving. I guarantee you this though, if both partners are not mutually looking to satisfy the other, it's not going to work. One partner cannot make a good marriage. And unfortunately, we have bought into that lie that if I'm a good enough spouse, it's going to make things work. That we feel guilty when it doesn't. The truth is, both spouses need to be sold out to meeting the needs of the other if it's going to work. This kind of romantic love that we're talking about, I think, is very fragile. It must be nourished. It must be cared for. And if only one person is seeking to meet the needs of the other and it's not being returned, it's going to die. It is going to wither and die. So it is very important that both spouses are committed to meet the needs of the other. That's where you get mutual satisfaction. Where you see troubles in this area is where only one may be looking out for the needs of the other. One is giving and one is taking. God forbid if they're both taking, because there's not going to be anything there. But God has designed it so that there is mutual giving, mutual satisfaction. And that takes communication. That takes sometimes sacrifice. That takes being honest with each other. And if only one is doing it, it's not going to work. And this is where, again, most marriages fall apart. We're looking for what we can get. We're out to satisfy number one, me. And if you don't satisfy me, I'll go find someone who will. That becomes the mindset. And I will tell you, as a husband or a wife, if you are not interested in satisfying the needs of your spouse, somebody else will. And I'm not for one moment excusing infidelity whatsoever. But I am saying that that's what often leads to it. And if you want a marriage that's going to last, if you want a marriage that is going to be enjoyable, both need to be looking out for one another. And when that happens, the beautiful thing is, both needs are met. And that's where you find mutual satisfaction, which is what God had intended all along. Swindoll notes, marriage requires mutual unselfishness. When I speak to those who are still single, I frequently address the issue of selfishness. I'll often say, if you tend toward being selfish, if you're the type who clings to your own rights and has no interest sharing with others, please do the world and certainly any potential mate a favor and don't marry. Why do I make such a strong statement? Because marriage, a good marriage, requires mutual unselfishness. And the beautiful result is that mutual unselfishness leads to mutual satisfaction. When the husband is more concerned with meeting the wife's needs than his own, when the wife is more concerned with meeting the husband's needs than her own, both get their needs met. And both are satisfied. I came across an obscure verse in the Old Testament law that really bears this out well. Moses commanded way back in Deuteronomy 24, verse 5. Listen to these words. If a man has recently married, he must not be sent to war or have any other duty laid on him. For 1 year he is to be free to stay at home and bring happiness to the wife he has married. Did you catch that last line? It does not say he should be free to stay at home to get happiness from the wife he has married. And for all those who say that the Bible, and particularly the Old Testament, is anti-women and puts down wives and women, you haven't read it. You haven't read it close enough. Because right here it says he is to bring happiness to his wife. Now the flip side of that is the wife is to bring happiness to the husband. But you see the selfless nature here? It's not about getting my needs met, it's about meeting the needs of that other person. And when that happens, that's when marriage works. That's what God designed, to be mutually satisfying. A second joy in marriage is mutual support. Certainly there's more to marriage than the physical, intimate aspects. And beyond physical satisfaction, there is the emotional support of one another. Turn over to Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, verse 1. Proverbs 14, verse 1. The wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands the foolish one tears hers down. Now, we've all heard of the home wrecker, right? Someone on the outside that comes in and destroys a marriage. The truth is, the wife or the husband, either one can destroy their own marriage, and more often than not does. Oftentimes when you see a marriage disintegrate and crumble, it's not because of forces on the outside, it's an inside job. We wreck it ourselves. So we can either build it up or tear it down. And we're going to see a very specific way we do that in just a moment. Go back a couple of chapters to chapter 12. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 4. A wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones. Folks, you can be a crown or you can be a cancer. How's that for a choice? You can be an honor. You can lift up your spouse in the eyes of others, or you can eat away from the inside. That's the difference between one who supports and one who tears down. And you know how we support and tear down each other the most? By our words. What comes out of our mouth does more to build up or tear down the other person. We've all known couples who are like wrecking balls, right? They're just smashing into each other with the things that they say. We think that an abusive relationship is only when one lays hands on the other. Oh no. Oh no. Much more damage can be done by words. And that's often the way it happens. Oh, it might take the form of sarcasm or humor, but there's nothing funny about the aftermath of two people that tear each other down verbally. Want to make this practical? Let's turn again to the New Testament, to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Paul gets very specific about our words, especially as they have to do with one another. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. I know that was written in the context of a church, and certainly it applies there. But let's apply this in the home. Let's apply this to husband and wife. Paul says, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. The word there for unwholesome literally means rotten. Like rotten fruit. And isn't that the way many married couples speak to each other. Oh, maybe not in public. Oh, no, in public, we're real good, you know, sometimes. But boy, you get at home, behind closed doors, and out comes the wrecking ball. The words that damage and destroy. Let's agree to put away the sarcastic infighting, the negative put-downs, the stinging verbal swipes against each other. Let's make it a point to build each other up verbally. Think about what you say, preferably before you say it. Think about how it's going to impact that person who is supposed to be the love of your life, the person that outside of God should be number one in your life. How is my words going to impact? And you say, yeah, but you don't understand how they talk to me. It doesn't matter. You're not to be reactive, you're to be proactive. Even if they're tearing you down, you build them up. And I know that that may not last forever, and you cannot build a marriage by yourself, but you can do your part. And it begins with our words. How do we support one another by what we say? Or are we tearing each other down? Turn over to Proverbs 23, or I'm sorry, 24. Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24. This doesn't specifically speak of a marriage, but the principle, I believe, is here. Proverbs 24, beginning in verse 3. By wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. We've talked a lot about wisdom and knowledge in our series here in Proverbs. What about that word understanding? I think that's also very important, and especially between a husband and a wife. We need to be understanding of each other. We need to learn each other. We need. You say, oh, I've been with them for umpteen years. Of course I know them. Do we really? Do we understand what happened in their life before we met them? Maybe some of the scars that they carry that weren't ours. We didn't have anything to do with it, but they're still there. And it still makes them who they are today. Maybe walking in their shoes. Maybe they suffer physically in ways you don't. And you can't understand why they feel the way they do, the way they act sometimes, maybe the way they react sometimes. Again, it's getting out of ourselves and it's about them. Understanding them. Understanding who they are, where they've been. Here's another practical tip. Mutually support each other spiritually. I find it hard to believe that it came from this source, but a professor at Harvard University published the results of a study on marriages that stayed together, and it proposed three keys to not getting a divorce. Pray together, read the Bible together, go to church together. Hard as it is to believe something like that came out of Harvard University, it did. And they discovered a 99% success rate among 1,200 couples who adhered to these principles. Now, considering the national average, which is at about 50% of marriages that last, that's pretty good. But it tells me that many Christian couples aren't doing this together. Oh, you might go to church together. Check that one. But are we praying together? Are we reading the Bible together? That's how we spiritually support each other. Our world is filled with forces that are trying to tear us down. We need to have a safe haven where we are affirmed and not attacked. And what better place to find that than in the home? Sadly, that's often a place we're attacked most of all. Now, the third joy of marriage found in the book of Proverbs, I'm calling mutual serenity, peace. And I got to admit, as we look at these verses, it's kind of like looking at a photograph negative. It's showing us the opposite, so we have to kind of flip it around to get the truth. You'll see what I'm saying. Turn to Proverbs 19. And again, remember, where it says wife here, it also applies to the husband. Proverbs 19, verses 13 and 14. A foolish son is his father's ruin, and a quarrelsome wife is like constant dripping. Houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. In chapter 21, verse 9. Better to live on the corner of a roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Same chapter, verse 19. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and ill-tempered wife. Get the idea? 25, verse 24. Better to live on the corner of a roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Boy, that kind of sounds familiar. Yeah, same verse. Whenever the Bible repeats something that's saying, pay attention, this is important. And then verse chapter 27, verses 15 and 16. A quarrelsome wife is like constant dripping on a rainy day. Restraining her is like restraining the wind or grasping oil with the hand. That word that's translated quarrelsome, it's rendered contentious in the King James Version, but I think translator James Moffat probably came the closest when he rendered it nagging. A spouse who quarrels or nags constantly creates the kind of atmosphere that is contentious, filled with strife, tension. You talk about being able to cut the air with a knife. That's a recipe to get that kind of result. There's an Arab proverb, which in the Arabic, you get the full impact. It says, three things make a house intolerable. Tack, the leaking of rain. Knack, the nagging of a wife. And back, which is bugs. And this is what Solomon is saying. God hates family discord. We saw that back in Proverbs 6. We should do everything we can in our home to produce the kind of love and harmony and peace. Ogden Nash gave some brilliant advice for marriage in this little poem. To keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup, whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up. Isn't that the truth? Sometimes the best way to keep peace is to keep quiet. Rather than insisting on our own way, rather than insisting that we're right, let it go. Just as there's nothing more mentally and emotionally draining as constant stress and conflict, there's nothing so mentally and emotionally restorative and refreshing as peace and quiet. So these are the joys of marriage that God has designed: mutual satisfaction, mutual support, mutual serenity. But I ask you, how many marriages look like that? Even amongst Christians, this tends to be the exception instead of the rule. Why is that? Well, there's no school that couples can attend to earn a degree in family strength. It just doesn't work like that. Marriages become strong not because the husband and wife have gone to school and learned all the rules, but because they pay the price to be different. Because they instill biblical truth into everyday life. They conduct their relationships in the realm of wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. When we can get our eyes off of ourselves and commit ourselves to that other person for their well-being, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and you find someone that's willing to do the same for you, you will find the joys of marriage as God intended it to be. You say, well, I'm already married to someone, and they're not that way. Am I to go change them? Yeah, good luck with that. Tell me how that works out. We don't have the power to change anyone, but we do know someone who does. God has the power to change. Now, they have to be willing. But the best thing you can do for a spouse who is not supportive and not satisfying to you and not meeting your needs, pray for them. And I guarantee you, the more you pray for your spouse, the less animosity and bitterness and resentments will grow toward them. It's impossible to resent someone you truly pray for. And you may find that the person that's changed isn't them. It might be you. And that might have been the issue all along. Let God do His work. Now, if you find your own marriage falls short in these areas, don't despair. If you want to repair and rebuild, there's still time. It won't be done in a day or a week, maybe not a month or a year. But the process begins with a commitment to be selfless, to be supportive, and to be serving. That's something that can be done today. And remember, it's never too late to start doing what's right.